Coming up next, we have Art Waves with Wendy Butler.
Thank you for spending your Tuesday afternoon, the 11th of July, with KHSU. I'm Wendy Butler, and you've got Art Waves on glass. My guest today is Eureka glass sculptor John Gibbons, whose work I happened upon the other day during a walk when I visited Old Town Art Gallery. He grew up in Reading, where his father was a painter and a glass collector. And we'll start there. I was intrigued by that because glass collector, I don't know what that means. I'm envisioning glasses on a shelf somewhere, and I'm sure I'm wrong.
Well, when I was really young, he'd take us to antique bottle shows. In Anderson, there's an annual antique bottle show. And so he'd give me $5, and I would go buy a dozen bottles, all the cheap ones that the people were selling. And so there's hundreds of these antique bottles from, 1800 to the present. And a lot of them were handmade. And so he would pick one up, try to explain to me how it was made by hand. And it just didn't make any sense because it has to be molten. So how do you make it by hand? And so that really caught my attention, how do you make this by hand? And I was always making things as a kid, and he was always encouraging me to paint. And so there was always this bug in me that wanted to try to make glass.
You said you were always making things as a kid. Like, what kind of things were you making?
Like little boats, trying to make go-karts. I was like a 3D artist. My brother was very much into drawing 2D, but I was always cutting cardboard and building little cars and trying to construct three-dimensional things and then getting into ceramics, too. My dad encouraged me to do ceramics. But, he also collected Waterford crystal. And European cut crystal. And he'd try to explain to me these are made by hand. And it just didn't make any sense because, it's so rare to see glass tools and how glass is made. He didn't even know. He just liked the way it looked. And so he definitely inspired me to appreciate glass.
But of course, you spent your time building lots of different things. What in particular about the glass drew you in, even to the point where you started to officially study it when you went to college?
It was the antique bottles and that crystal. Like, I grew up with it, and every holiday my dad would bring out all the crystal for the holiday dinners. And then growing older and coming to Humboldt, really, I started seeing these colorful pipes, and that really sprung my interest as well. And then I used to tell my friends, oh, I want to blow glass. And my dad would say, oh, Shasta College in Redding, California has glass blowing. And I thought, oh, well, whatever, Dad. I started studying architecture, but stayed in the glass or in the art field. I'd always take a ceramics class or a drawing class. And then the ceramics teacher at Shasta College, he did the glass as well. And so he invited me into the class. And as soon as I saw the ovens and everything, I'd never seen anything like it. I mean, it's roaring 2,000 degree ovens, and it really got me excited. And then the next day I was scooping the molten glass from the furnace, and it was just so exciting. I just didn't want to do anything else but that.
Now, people often talk about blowing glass. And of course, you're not literally with your lips on something and blowing it up like you would a balloon or something like that. I mean, blowing glass, it has to do with taking an instrument and, like you were saying, putting it in an extreme, putting it in fire.
Yeah, it's like a metal blowpipe. It's just basically a metal pipe, and it's a little bit more special for the glass. But when you get a blob, it's like the consistency of honey, molten glass. And so you have to turn the pipe to keep it on the pipe, and then you blow through it while it's still real soft, and you get a little bubble, and then it freezes. And then you can put it back into the furnace and turn it, and it gathers more molten glass and gets a little bigger. and then you can blow that a little bigger, and then when it gets cold, you put it back in. So it's kind of like an onion. It kind of grows by layers, and you can put colors in between the layers.
Well, two things. One, so you do, carefully, you do actually blow air into it to enlarge it.
Yeah, it's like, I compare it to trying to blow table salt just a few inches across the table. That's how hard you need to blow. You don't really need to blow like you're blowing up a balloon and it's going to, you know, puff your cheeks out. It's literally gooey, molten soft. So just a little, and it'll inflate.
And adding color, how do you add color? Do you like take a container of some sort and pour?
There's all kinds of different methods of color application. I'd say the funnest color application is when you have molten color in a furnace. And I've only done that once, but my typical application is it's crushed powdered colored glass, which I buy from Germany. And so that gives you, you roll the molten clear through this powdered glass and it colors it pretty much any color you can imagine. Or you can get large solid rods of colored glass and you can put a big chunk of blue on the end of your pipe. And then when you put clear on top of it, it blows out blue. So when you see color in glass, it's typically just a extremely thin layer of color. And then it's covered in clear, which you don't really notice.
Now, when you were studying glass at Shasta College, you know, you're in the academic part of it there. What do you recall, you know, based on your previous knowledge as you had of glass, what surprised you most, would you say, about the process of actually making, you know, sculpting glass?
As far as what, like that?
How it's done.
Oh, well, it's such a bizarre, I mean, compared to, you know, cutting wood or doing concrete or ceramics, I mean, it's so, you can't touch it. So you have to learn these tools, these metal tools that can touch it. And then the ambidextrarity, you have to be very ambidextrous because it's both hands going simultaneously and you can never stop turning it. So there's a big learning curve to get good enough to make a piece. But just getting there is so much fun because it's so challenging and intimidating, you know, because it's like you can't look away. You're going to burn yourself. And I remember just ditching all my classes because I was studying architecture but hating the computer. I didn't want to sit in front of the computer my whole life. And so nobody was in the glass studio most of the day at Shasta College. So I'd wander over there and I'd just make glass all day. And I think that really boosted my skills because I was practicing so much. But now as far as learning, there's so many videos online and you can really learn something in a split second if you see someone else doing it, which is such a big help. That wasn't available just, you know, a few decades ago.
Actually watching somebody prepare it online because there was no online.
Right, yeah. We would watch a lot of videos at Shasta College. Old VHS, it was fun. But yeah, it was definitely inspiring seeing other people work.
You have a number of different series. You know, you have a website, gibbonsglass.com, and on that website, you are showing a number of different series that you've worked on. But before we go to that, let's talk about a little bit of what I saw when I went to Old Town Art Gallery. There was much more there than the thing that immediately pulled me in, and that was, it was glass sculpture because it was glass pieces that were starfish.
Uh-huh.
And they weren't simply sitting there looking like, oh, those are starfish. They were in motion.
Right, yeah.
The leg going, it's probably not called a leg, but part of it going over.
Yeah, well, I always see these stars as like a figure, a human figure. There's a head and arms and legs, and the legs are basically bending over the edge of the table, which I when the glass is molten, I bend them and then it freezes in that position. And I always tell people, are they living on the edge or are they laid back? So they're kind of both. But my main thing really is sculpture. It's I blow a little bit of glass, but the sculpture, it's much different. So there's no bubble. It's the same technique as blowing glass, just no bubble, no blowing. And so I'm just shaping the molten glass into shapes and adding colors. I guess my main signature design is putting clear, a lot of clear on top of the color. So it gives it this optical wet look.
Now, along with the starfish at the Old Town Art Gallery, you also have containers, vessels as well.
Yeah, the blown work.
Yeah.
So I like these classic amphora shapes, reminiscent of old Grecian urns that maybe wine or water or olive oil might have been carried in, and, you know, 100 BC. And they're still out there in the Mediterranean, sunk into the bottom with starfish and creatures living on them. And that really just grabbed my attention because I love that shape. And then I started sticking the starfish to them to be reminded of that. And it's just, so they're just supposed to be old sunken, you know, ship wreckage.
There's something else that I'm looking at here on your website. And I'm not going to call it any kind of, not like a sunken ship wreckage or wreckage of any kind, but it's, at first you see what looks like a vase, and it's beautifully colored. Well, first of all, the color, like a sort of a blacks and whites, but it's...
Well, that's called the, it's called the Vertigo series.
Yeah. And so... if you stare at it long enough, you get...
Yeah, it's like the...
It's like a, yeah, it's,
there's a
it
lot
plays
of,
with your eyes.
Yeah, you can't tell the lines... you can't tell if the lines are in the front of the vase or the back. And so you kind of get this depth perception, vertigo feeling, and it's really optical. It moves a lot.
It does. Did you paint that, or that's all combining glass?
It is. So those are all black rods of glass that I roll the molten clear bubble over and then either twist it or keep it straight depending on the pattern I want. And that's all inspired from Italian Venetian techniques. The Venetians are really the glass masters of the world since pretty much forever. They were banished to a small island in 1300 or so they wouldn't burn the town of Venice down. And ever since, they've just been mining the techniques of glass. So that's really a big inspiration for me. I studied with an Italian master, Pino Signoretto, up in Oregon a few years ago. And his main thing wasn't blowing, it was sculpting. So he's sculpting all types of human figures and animals, and he's really hailed as the best glass sculptor in the world.
John Gibbons. His glass sculptures are at Eureka's Old Town Art Gallery. And this program is Art Waves on KHSU. I'm Wendy Butler. We continue now discussing his Vertigo series, whose images are available for viewing at gibbonsglass.com. Now, on this piece that we're looking at, that you were just talking about in the Vertigo series, there's something that is clinging, looks like it's clinging to it. What is that?
It's a big piece of clear glass with gold leaf on the top of it. And I was really into this series of black and gold, just kind of a glitzy, bright deco, art deco theme. And I made, I don't know, 30 or 40 of these things. I was really making them in San Diego years ago. And
is that when you ran a hot glass shop?
Yeah. My friend and I...
What does that mean? You ran a hot glass shop. That's a, you know, that's on your website, but what did you do at
that? a hot glass studio, it's like a metal shop or a wood shop. It's its own facility of ovens and furnaces. And I partnered with a friend of mine who was also a glass artist, and we found this really old it was a car repair place, and we put a new roof on it and fixed it up. It was in Barrio Logan of San Diego, which is a great little arts community. And we fixed it up and we built this huge glass shop. And it was really like the biggest glass shop in San Diego for a while. And unfortunately, the property sold and we had to move away. But by running it, you know, it was like I was fixing everything and bringing in employees and shipping all my glass out from there. And he was as well, Nick McGuire. And yeah, so that was it. And it's a lot of work. I mean, it's always like something's breaking or you got to sweep. And it was a really fun. I have the same type of facility here in Eureka now, but it's just mine. I don't have a partner.
Do you call it something?
I like to call it the Starship.
Okay.
I guess that's the nickname.
I mean, do you have open hours or is it something you're a private studio?
It's more a private studio by appointment only. I kind of come and go a lot. I mean, pretty much I'm there all the time, but it would be best to contact me. I don't really have open hours.
But you're located in Old Town or?
Oh, well, no. Old Town is where Old Town Art Gallery
right.
is. I'm just south of Old Town on Broadway.
And if people want to get in touch with you, the best way to do it is how?
You can find my contact info on my website, gibbonsglass.com or gibbonsglass@gmail.com. Or my phone number is 619-964-5277.
Let's talk about the Glass Heads series.
Yeah.
Because we're talking about sculpting, but I could be wrong about that as well. But I'm looking right now at a glass head, a sculpted head.
These were... So when I first started glass at Shasta College, my teacher said, oh, John, there's this event in San Luis Obispo at Cal Poly called the California Glass Exchange. And so it was kind of a biannual event of glass artists getting together to do demonstrations. So I went down there and it was so inspiring because basically all I saw at Shasta College was people attempting to make cups. And so I go to this event and there was these real pros, James Novak from Seattle. He was sculpting these heads and it just totally inspired me. I'd never seen or imagined you could do that. And so I didn't start those heads until a few years later at Chico. And I just kept doing it and eventually studied with a Czech Republic glass artist, Martin Janeski. And he kind of showed me these tricks of how to sculpt much more anatomical features of the human head. And so I went back to Chico State. That was a summer course and sculpted, I don't know, half a dozen heads or more. And then eventually I started sticking starfish to them. And
we're looking at one of those right now, or two of those.
Oh, yeah. It was a lamp. So it was kind of a Poseidon, King of the Sea. Inspired.
And you have wires in it and you can turn it on as a lamp?
Yeah. It was, it's on a dimmer switch. So, it's like a crown of starfish.
I'm noticing that. And we're talking about sculpting. So again, I'm just trying to imagine this. Sculpting not blowing or is some of it blowing?
It's a combination.
Yeah.
So it's a blown bubble that is then, I pinpoint the heat with a torch for the nose and I push the nose out, pinpoint the heat for the mouth. So the bubble is not moving except for the small part I'm heating and manipulating.
And then the starfish, those are sculpted.
Right, that's solid sculpted as well.
Yeah. And so you take a sort of molten glass and you use a material to make shape, make the starfish shape and then it dries.
Right. Cools into position.
Yes.
And, but you can't let it cool too much. So that sculpture is in and out of the oven every 30 seconds or so. And then we're blasting it with big torches and really paying attention to the color. If it's looking too clear, it's cold. So you got to keep this like orange glow in the whole piece. And that just comes from working with it for a long time and knowing what you're looking at.
Do you have any of these glass heads at Old Town Art Gallery?
I don't. I need to get some in there. I've got a few in boxes that are a little dusty. I need to finish them. But yeah, I need to get some of those in there. They're quite odd, you know, rare.
Mm-hmm.
It's a unique art piece. It's not your typical vase or whatever you want to call it. It's a collector piece.
Yeah, I don't think you have any cups at Old Town Art Gallery.
I had a pair they sold.
Oh.
I'm not a fan of cups. I mean, I don't know. I'd rather make a sculpture than a cup. Everybody makes cups, but they're still fun to make. I do make a few here and there.
Do you have a preference for a subject? Because I've only seen a very small part of your work, and so I don't know if you keep returning to sea creatures or if you return to different types of...
Yeah, I try to stay in the sea creature realm. I started this theme of starfish in San Diego, and it just really took off. And I sell them in Coronado at Art for Wildlife, and then I started selling them at the street shows in San Diego, and I realized I kind of had something. You know, people really wanted to buy them, so I took it to a wholesale show in Las Vegas, and I sold them wholesale, so I got into galleries around the country, and then they started reordering, and it just kind of blossomed. It just really grew, and now I have all these art galleries specifically on coastal themed areas. So I kind of stayed in that realm, and I can't help but branch out sometimes and just make bizarre pieces of glass. But the coastal ocean glass is definitely something I can mine forever, that inspiration.
What would you say was your most bizarre thing that you've done over the past?
Oh, well, what comes to mind, I have this 6-foot sculpture, and I made it in college. And so I took a computer keyboard and I pushed it into sand and then poured molten glass into the impression. And then we pulled the keyboard out and twisted it into a spiral. And I made 3 of these and stacked them on top of each other. And so it looks like a big double helix. And I call it binary code. It's supposed to be about computers becoming intertwined with our DNA. And so that was just a really fun thing in college. College is great because you can make this bizarre, you know, whatever art. You're not even thinking about how to sell it. And
well, what happened to the 6-foot sculpture?
Oh, I still have it.
Yeah.
I never thought about selling it, so it's just in my studio. I should just haul it into Old Town Art Gallery.
You should.
For an oddity.
Yeah.
But
I mean, do you come out on Arts Alive?
Yeah, definitely.
So you should bring it for the next Arts Alive.
Yeah, it's every first Saturday.
Yeah.
And yeah, we're always looking for new applicants at Old Town Art Gallery. It's a great place.
Right, because you become a member, and it's members who exhibit and sell their work.
Right, so there's about 17 of us now. And so everybody works about 2 days a month. And it's a great place to get inspired by other artists. And it's a great place to grow as an artist.
What are you working on now?
Now I've been fabricating this new furnace. And I have a big electric furnace that's kind of dated as far as electrical technology goes. It's only about less than 15 years old, but it's electric, so it really costs a lot to run electricity here in Humboldt County because they generate electricity from natural gas. So I'm building a furnace that's going to run on natural gas, and it's going to be a lot smaller. And I was hoping to finish it in a few months, and I'm coming up on a year now, but it's almost done. So I'm hoping to finish it before the baby comes. My wife and I are having a baby any day. And so, yeah, it'll be cheaper to run, so I won't have to just stress as much as of the utility bill. The utility bill can really become a boring aspect of the art creative side.
Well, when you're doing the art that relies so much on the high fire, heat.
It really consumes the utilities.
Yeah. Yes, it does. Would you say then, are you a full-time artist?
Yeah, definitely full-time. Yeah. If there's something beyond full-time, I think I'm that. It's like...
Full-time plus.
Yeah, it's like, you know, wake up, thinking about glass, go to sleep thinking about glass, dream about glass, get back to work with glass. It's a lot of fun.
John Gibbons. He is a member of Old Town Art Gallery, where his glass art is also on display and for sale. Old Town Art Gallery, open daily, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at 417 2nd Street, Suite 102, Old Town, Eureka. You can also contact Gibbons and view his art at gibbonsglass.com. Art Waves is produced for KHSU at Humboldt State University. If you have suggestions for Art Waves interviews, you can contact me directly at light@renanets.com. My contact information is also available on the KHSU website. And there are several ways you can listen to Art Waves. You can catch the Tuesday afternoon broadcasts at 1:30 p.m. You can listen online to live and archived broadcasts, and that's at khsu.org. And Art Waves podcasts are also available at iTunes. Thank you for listening. I'm Wendy Butler. Until next time.
Evans was one of the great artists of the 20th century and of all time. If you dig modern jazz, tune in to Gone Sides, Tuesday starting at 8 p.m. I'm your host, Darius Brotman. That's 8 o'clock on Tuesdays on KHSU, your jazz station.
Hi, this is Ray from Car Talk. You know, for the last 30 years, you've had to put up with this. And we know it's been a struggle. Well, it's time for Car Talk to make room on this station for something new and hopefully a little more professional. You can still listen to us online, but here on the station, we hope you enjoy the next generation of great programs. And thanks.
Join us this Saturday beginning at 10 to hear Planet Money and How I Built This.
All right, so let me ask a question. Why does this keep working? What would I have thought? Would I have believed it? So which one was it? What were you thinking when you saw this?
The question that you just asked, Jed, is probably the wrong question.
How do you know?
Really? You literally?
You do. And why are you there exactly?
But what if you were good at it?
And how did he meet her?
What did they do?
Is there something about their brains?
Why?
Why?
Why would?
Why?
Why would?
Why?
Why?
Why? If you've got questions, the answer is
Radio Lab.
Tuesday evenings at 7 here on KHSU.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the newest, the greatest, the most spectacular show in entertainment history.
What happened?
Put your hands together for the fabulous
Los Ensemble Economique with DJ Rat Race and Jacob Sweden. Tuesdays from 10 to midnight on KHSU.
Listener-supported, diverse public radio for the north coast of California and the south coast of Oregon. This is KHSU and KHSU HD 90.5 Arcata, KHSR 91.9 Crescent City, and KHSG 89.9 Garberville. Donors include Eureka's Black Fawn Gallery. For July, the gallery presents Remote Wilderness, featuring paintings by Andrea Castillo.